search. Each man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno.
Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 156 of Broken by Concept. We have Nathan Mott, we have Coach Curtis. Now today I want to start with an interesting post from Riot. This was by Riot Raptor, one of the designers of Nefiri, the new champion, mid-champion.
Is that how you pronounce it? Nefiri? Nefiri?
Nefiri. I think it's Nefiri. And basically, this post is kind of going over the champ design. And I love these posts because it gives us a bit of a snapshot into how Riot perceive, how they think about the game. And I think it's really interesting to hear from Riot's perspective how they think about the game. So I just want to go through this post. Maybe we can riff off a few things here.
Great.
Okay. So the title here, How Nefiri Teaches Playing as an Assassin. Nefiri is designed to be an accessible assassin that is focused more on decision-making and strategy that assassin players need to succeed than on tricky mechanical execution. So more about kind of, I guess, macro decision-making rather than raw mechanical prowess. Nefiri's kit asks the player three fundamental questions that assassin players need to understand. Number one, when should I go in? Number two, who should I target? And number three, what angle should I approach from? If Nefiri can answer these questions correctly and the enemy does not respond appropriately or they do not deny her these opportunities, her kit gives her everything she needs to get in and get rewarded with a juicy kill. If not, she's likely to die quickly as her kit does not have many escape options as other assassins. There is also a fourth key question. How do I get out afterwards? But Nefiri's kit makes that easy because her first kill reset gives her the tools to get out after the kill. She just needs to be able to make sure she's going to get that first kill. It may seem counterintuitive that a champion designed to be easy to pick up has fewer options for when they make mistakes, but that's actually the point. By boiling things down to just those three questions and making them the difference between success and failure, we can hone in on teaching those core skills. When you try to charge into the front and get body blocked, it becomes clear that you should have flanked. When you bounce off of a tank or a bruiser and can't kill them, it's pretty clear you chose the wrong target. When the enemy milieu kickballs you out of your W, it's pretty clear that you didn't wait until key cooldowns were expended. It puts in a sharp focus of what went wrong. To pay for this reliability, she also has sharper counterplay than other assassins who may be able to sneak behind enemy lines easier or have get-out-of-jail-free escape buttons when things go wrong, which brings me to my next point, how Nefiri teaches playing against assassins. So we'll pause there.
Yeah, there's so much to unpack there already. I have so many thoughts. Okay. I haven't seen this post, so...
Right.
All right, first things first, I love that what they've done. I feel like I got this visualization of like they're like in the room. It's like, all right, let's forget our next champion. Mm. We all want to do an assassin. And they're right on the board, like define what an assassin is. It seems like they've done. And they've broke down. There's certain assassins in the game that maybe are more mechanically dependent. So like, you know, champs like Akali and Zed. And they said, maybe we don't really have many assassins that are more just like pure decision-making. I thought that's really interesting just to start really high level. I was just trying to think, what are low decision make assassins?
Well, what's really interesting is...
Sorry, low mechanical assassins.
Well, Diana is, I think, one.
Dude, Diana is hard.
You think Diana's hard?
I think Diana's hard.
So what makes Diana difficult to you?
Because you've got to hit the Q, yeah. Right? And also, like, when you're in. Like, okay, so I play Rek'Sai, and I play Rek'Sai pure assassin style. People go this new Stridebreaker build and stuff like that. I go Yomu's into Edgenite, right? I'll put Rek'Sai as a very easy to execute assassin, right? But Rek'Sai can get in and out, right? Diana, once you're in, you need to have very quick decisiveness on the engage. Like, because Diana doesn't go over walls, you know? I mean, so like Diana, like you got to like be around the fight and like pick your window. Because I've actually had Diana in my below goal program. And I'm pretty much sure I'm going to remove her.
Interesting.
Because I think she's actually really hard. Again, it looks simple, but in terms of actually the decisiveness is such a insane skill. And you get really, you know, that's like got high level players.
So it's interesting because I think mechanically she's relatively easy to execute, but I think you need to really know your limits.
Yeah.
Right? You need to really, if you don't know your limits and you think you can kill when you don't, you're done.
That's right. There's no, there's not forgiving at all.
But I kind of, it's interesting. I'm going to bounce back on that because look, I see where you're coming from totally. But the thing is I think it teaches that kind of it tickles the fancy for assassin players. Assassin players, period, need to know their limits. In mid lane,
at least. That's true, yeah.
There are many assassins. Whether you're playing, whether you're playing Zed, whether you're playing Akali, whether you're playing Diana, Echo, whatever, you got to know your limits, period. And I get it. You don't have something that can jump over walls, but not many. Think about it. If you're using ZW over a wall, you're probably not going to even have the damage to kill anyway, because you need that W to probably reposition or land. Do you know what I mean? So a lot of, most assassins don't really jump over walls. The only one that is somewhat reliable is Vex, which was all I was going to get to. But before we get to Vex, I just want to talk about Dino further. I think that Dino isn't for everyone. I totally agree. But the thing is, I think there are people that want that clear. Okay, I know exactly here why I failed. And then hear exactly why this worked. I landed my Q. I got AoE. I got a really good position. I come in from the side. I knew my limits. I got onto the squishy targets. Boom. The thing I like, that's what I like about it. It has very clear identity.
You know when you win or lose.
Very clear reference points. That's incredibly clear reference
points. That's initially why I picked the champion, because I thought I had really clear reference points.
But yes, I see where you're coming from. It's like, it's extremely like punishing in that regard.
It's sort of like the, I'm trying to, because what I'm really trying to think about is just like the learning journey for like a silver, bronze, unranked player. And like that skill set, like, you know, maybe I'm just downplaying players too much. That could be the case. I think about that a bit. But just watching some reviews and stuff like that, I'm like, God, like there's so much here. Like it's so hard to know the decisiveness.
This whole below goal program, how we have our... these approved champions. It's been a very controversial thing in my Discord. And, you know, we've spoken off camera about it. You know, we've really been hardcore on it. And I'm actually now put my foot down where it's like, I don't even do coaching for people that don't play the approved champions in my program. So now we've started doing a little bit of coaching in our below goal programs.
Yep.
I won't coach a champ that isn't an approved champion. And, you know, our job, right, in the below goal program is to streamline the journey to gold and teach the game in the most streamlined, holistic way possible, right? Through these specific champion lenses, because we believe with these champions, your journey is going to be smoother, easier, streamlined, whatever. The thing is, though, is that we got to have some sort of, we're not going to cater for everyone. I totally agree. Our below goal programs, they're not for everyone.
Absolutely not.
They're for a very specific type of individual. They're for someone who wants to learn the game properly.
Yeah.
And they want to do it, you know, they're not really too concerned with the champ they play. They just want to get the results and they just want to learn the game properly, the fundamentals, et cetera, and how to think about the game. That's already throwing a lot of people out of the mix, because a lot of people just want to play for fun. They want to play the champ that
lots
they want
of different
to play.
Champs, yeah.
That, right. My point being is that what I'm trying, at least in my program, I'm trying to find a balance. Okay, there are people on the spectrum of hardcore mage facilitator in the middle where they kind of like to be a bit of a carry, but they don't want to be like a... They want to be the hardcore carry and they don't want to facilitate as much. And then there's the assassins, and then there's the assassin players. I'm trying to have a champ that kind of tickles everyone's fancy, but have the simplest champion for each category. So if you want to play a facilitator, we have something like a Seraphine. If you want to play more of a carry, we have like an Aesol. And then for assassins, we have like an Echo or a Diana. And what I'm trying to do is cater for everyone. And I'm like, I wish it was as simple as like, let's just leave even some of the assassins altogether. Get rid of them all. And let's everyone just learn the game through bloody, you know, Aesol or Malzahar or Annie or whatever. But that's
it's like, too limiting.
It's too limiting. Yeah. So like, I'm like you, I understand it's going to be hard, but it's like, I think there are people out there that are up for that challenge. And I think there are some people that appreciate that whole feast or famine element of Diana.
Yeah.
But I think you raise a really good point. And I think it's important. If we do have champs like this in our program, I actually feel like it's our responsibility to educate that this is...
It makes me aware. That's what I didn't do.
Yeah, and I don't think I've done that either.
I came, you know, I did some Dino reviews. I think it was like, you know, unranked or iron. And that was sort of the review. That was sort of like the knife. I was like, you know, this is... You're just not going to learn the game properly this way. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you know, maybe again, it's sort of like, you know, maybe an unranked iron bronze player shouldn't be playing that.
Yeah.
Because remember, we've said that the difference between high silver and iron is really big.
Night and day.
And bronze. You know, they're completely different.
There are, by the way, a lot of high silver people can actually play like a lot of champions.
Yeah, they can.
More than the MLA approved pro champions for sure. But it's like, how do we distinguish between a silver 2 and a bronze 3? You know, it's kind of hard. Like, our job is to really package that all together as like a level 30.
I mean, then you could argue,
you know?
It's like, well, there should be another program below that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe. You're right. So, again, we're trying to figure it out. We don't have the answers, right? We're just starting somewhere. And I'm sure we're going to remove champs, add champs, stuff. But I think you raise a really good point. There's that element of you can't get out. But I will say, I have a champ like Vex. Now, I've got Vex in my program. Vex is so similar to Nefiri from what it seems like, but a little bit more CC oriented, right? Think about the kit, right? You have like this ability that you go in, and if you kill someone, you're rewarded, right? Because you get the reset. But if you don't kill someone, you're screwed, which is very, very, very similar to Nefiri, where you're going to get the reset, right?
Yeah.
So, but not many people play Vex. People don't like that.
Yeah.
People don't like Vex. This is the craziest thing. And when I added Vex into my program, and I recommended Vex for a lot of people, people hate the idea of getting in, and if I don't get the kill, I can't do anything. People don't like
that. Do you know what the question that you get a lot of the time, Curtis, is? You know, we've made a joke on this podcast before as well. Like, you know, people email in and say, Nathan, Curtis, I want a champion that, you know, can jump over walls, has CC, he's tanky, his bruiser can carry, is good early game, all that sort of stuff, right? Because people want the versatility. Like, they want something that they think that being versatile in League of Legends is better because it's like I can adapt to any situation. But that's actually the complete wrong way. That's not how League works at all. It's actually the complete opposite.
You want to have a very clear niche job, and if it's very small.
If you do that really well, and the champion's designed for that, that champion's going to do better than the versatile champion any day of the week.
And that's what it's like.
It's like champs like Lee Sin and stuff like that. They're just so
hard.
So hard, and like generally actually sort of just bad. Like,
these champs haven't been reference points competitive. Typically, they are better for solo queue as well because you know exactly what to do. You know, you're spot on. And this is why...
Wright mentioned that in the post. Didn't they? I can't remember exactly the line, but you said that. What was it? They literally just nailed that. They said they find players.
Oh, it's easier to pick up. Has fewer options for when they make mistakes, but that's the point. Like, the point is that it's very easy to see where you went wrong.
Yeah, they want to make a champion like that. And that's how champs should be designed.
That's how they should be designed. Yeah,
that's how League works. People, but again, people don't think that's the way League
but
works.
But this is the thing: people don't like. Okay, like again, this is the biggest criticism I have with Vex. Where people say, come to me with Vex, they say, Curtis, I have this game. Everyone's tanky. No one can die. What do I do? Well, I'm like, your job is to find that one squishy member and kill that one squishy member.
That's right.
No matter how hard that is your job. Now, there are going to be games that are a lot harder than others, but you will always have a job.
Yeah, and if you do your job, dude, you win League of Legends games, just straight up. I literally have an example of a game I played Rek'Sai against a Kassante mid, okay? Mm-hmm. I was playing full Assassin, a Volibear full tank jungle, I can't remember what tank top laner it was or something like that. I can't remember. It was some tanky person, and like a tank support, and then Twitch. And my job, the only thing I said, and I was in Team Mastoff early game. Like, this was like straight up like loss. I actually like chucked in an FF vote because I thought I was just like, I screwed up the game. I already knew I screwed up the game. It was really bad. But I just doubled. I was like, okay, going to send it. Here we go, dude. I'm going to send it on Twitch every game. And we won that game. And I just literally just flashed every time. If you do your job, and this is in like a high elo lobby, guys. If you do your job so well in League of Legends, it's great. And Rek'Sai's really good at doing that job, like an assassin.
And that's what our program, we try to pick champs that have a clear identity, so you know exactly what they're there to do. But it's very uncomfortable for people, especially, I don't know what it's like for jungle, but for mid, let's say you're in an unfavorable matchup that you can't deal with. A common problem, funnily enough, I had a lot of Dyna reviews recently, and they're all versus Yasuo. Everyone. Every Dyna that came in all had Dyna versus Yasuo. And you know why?
Why is that?
Because she can't win the 1v1. You actually need...
So they bring in those VODs because, like, give me a solution to this.
Yeah, but the thing is what they don't realize, and this is what, like, again, I had to try and articulate, is that, you're not really going to win here. You're just going to farm, you're going to allow the Yasuo to shove you in, and then at some point, as long as you're farmed and you reset well, there will be a 2v2 or a 3v3 in the river, and you're going to be able to pop off with your jungler and then get a kill. And then there was, funnily enough, on one of the last Dyna reviews I did... You know, there was a fight that happened in the river later on. I'm like, how much easier this would have been if you were 30 more CS and 0-0-0 rather than 0-2 or whatever.
That's huge.
That is the difference.
That's the difference, yeah.
Your ability to
compensate for hard games by just being really strong.
Just be strong. Just farm and don't die. And like, but you got to have the foresight or the confidence in just, okay, if I'm strong.
You know what? You don't have to have that. You know what you have to remove? You have to remove the binary thinking. It's the opposite. You need to remove the, I can't play this game in this type of champ. I can't play in this game with my champion here. You actually have to remove that. That's just a strap narrative. And then you have to get specific.
Get specific. That's the only way.
Again, there's only two or three moments in that game. But again, it's 100% doable. It's 100% possible. Yeah. But that, I swear that's just a strap narrative. That's what it is. Not about, you got to remove that. You just do.
Yeah, and you just got to But this is where it really comes down to understanding your champion's strengths and weaknesses. And this is what it's really all about. What is your job in the game? What do I need to do? But that's why as well, like in League, you got to know your matchups. Because it's not because there's two parts. You got to know your trading patterns. But at a high level, like what is my champion doing to this champion? Is this a champ where I win and I can take good trades and I can kill? Mm. Is this one where it's pretty 50-50 and it could, depending on the jungle matchup? Or is it just, I can't do shit? You know, I just sit back, relax, and farm, and then I can play elsewhere. But that third one is very uncomfortable for a lot of people, and it's not intuitive. And they feel like if they're getting shoved in, this is the biggest thing I've noticed. They feel like if they're getting shoved in and they're not doing anything, like quote unquote, whatever doing anything means,
yeah,
they're going to lose the game.
No,
that's what they feel.
Yeah,
they feel like if they don't get a kill or impact a map by like 10 minutes or something, that the game's going to magically explode.
Yeah.
But the enemy are going to make really dumb decisions and they're going to give you an opportunity. I guarantee you, you just got to remain poised enough to be in that scenario where you can capitalize on that moment. But it's easier said than done. And this is why, you know, you just got to get specific. You're spot on. You got to get specific.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I was going to say last thing before we move on, like no one likes Vex. No one plays Vex. And I recommend it to so many people. No one likes her. That's the reason. I feel like I can't deal with many tanky members,
not versatile
whatever.
Enough.
But you got to get creative. And this is what I'm fascinated to see if people have the same experience with Nefiri. They like it on paper. Mm. Everyone plays Vex as well for the first time. And then they have that game where they verse a bunch of tanky members. What are they going to do?
And then they think this is the worst champ in the game.
Vex is so sick. You can get, there is like an infinite amount of creativity with her kit. How many games have you versed my Vex in games where like I'm like hovering around mid, shadowing the side, come in out of nowhere, no one anticipates it.
Nope.
Boom, you get a kill, pick, boom.
Yeah.
The game's just exploded.
Being decisive, that engage or something like that. Yeah, you can win any game with Vex.
Yeah, you can make so many amazing plays, but you got to be very, know what you need to do. Anyway, but from what they're saying here, Nefiri is very similar, right? You got to position well. What angle should I approach from?
Yeah.
That people really struggle with that, by the way.
Yeah.
Positioning.
People just want to, the typical thing is I see person, I run at them straight forward. That's the low elo mindset.
Yeah, that's right.
Plain fog of war. Fog of war is a very...
No, I'm going to say positioning.
Positioning.
I'm going to say flat out.
Just positioning.
Across the board, positioning is one of the most misunderstood. I wanted to do a video on it and I feel like I couldn't even attack it. It is so big. It is so massive. Positioning is like... Teaching positioning is one of the most difficult things.
There's so many variables.
It's invisible. Because you can position well and not get rewarded for it.
Because what you're seeing, the way you would have to actually learn positioning more so, I think, is learn it from the enemy team's perspective.
Yes.
Because they need to know like
what it feels
how
like.
They're moving. Because positioning, the way you position affects the enemy team. And the way, it's just like a constant back and forth, isn't it? So like, but it's so hard to see
It's so hard to visualize. Like if I were to position here.
A challenger player has so much muscle memory.
Yeah.
That's the hard thing to teach, right? That's why I feel like Darn is hard to get good ults because low elo players can't get good ults off because they're positioned too obviously.
Yeah, but then you got to realize that the players you're versing have the most terrible positioning.
That position as well.
So I think you're spot on later on, like Diana did. But even in saying that, I've got actually a straight up Diana one trick in my main program. Who actually got him as a mentor in my below goal program. And he went to Master straight up.
Yeah, but again, I think there's certain elo brackets again. Did he start in Platinum or something like that?
I don't know what his journey was, but what I'm saying is that like hardcore one trick Diana mid.
Yeah.
So the fact that you can hardcore pick Diana mid no matter what across all metas, he's been for like a long time, says to me that there's something about the champ that is pretty fundamental. And he's pretty like he even says many times there's so many things you can do. If the enemy roams, you can get towers really well. Like I think in mid maybe you have more options. I don't know. Or like you have more options to trade. Because your trading patterns are very simple in lane. You just Q, E, auto, W, and then you can back off a lot of the time, depending if you go phase rush or on the way state. But my point being is that like I think in higher elo, climbing with to like Master Plus is very difficult because that's when people are more aware of their surroundings and it's hard to get a good flank angle. But in lower elo, dude, people are so unaware. They're not tracking flanks. They're not looking at Fog of War. They're not thinking, oh, where's Diana? she could be there. No, they're just thinking, there's a tower in front of me, I'm going to get that tower, you know? Like, yeah, they're not protecting their flanks.
Well, that's if you're, you have good position as Diana, but more often than not, the Diana that would be right in front of them riding.
That is true.
And then throwing the cue, dodging the cue, right? So yeah, it goes both
or
ways.
Or flashing, and then they all flash, and then you get nothing.
Yeah.
I see what you mean, 100%. Yeah. No, that's a good point. I think something I'm going to have to go deep on in my program. I think it's our job, yeah, to educate that.
Because the topic that I'll be using is like plain fog of one, being patient in a fight, waiting for a certain
windows
ability, picking windows.
But then you got to int a lot to find your limits.
Those windows, yeah. That's the thing. It's like, where am
it's
I learning?
Lot.
It's like
a lot.
We've made an episode before on where does limit test and where's the learning?
Yeah, but going back to positioning, like, you know, I feel like positioning is such a big part of like the master plus climb. Like a huge part of it. Like I did a review today where he could have won the game if he just like he could have played this entire, like they would have won this entire sequence. He's playing Ahri, the Baron. Instead of, he like kind of did front to back, but then the only target that he could kill is the Nautilus. If he like looped around on the side and set off to the side, the Nautilus would have went in and then the Zaya trailed behind. He could have got straight onto the Zaya. That would change the situation. But that's so hard.
And that's, it's
like,
super hard.
You know,
yeah,
you just got to like,
it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So, I've never, for jungle, I've actually never, I barely talk about fighting really as junglers for Master Plus. You know, the problem with Master Plus is understanding the game, like reading like win conditions, understanding what laners want.
Yeah.
Your laners, the enemy team. That's the bigger thing for junglers specifically.
No, I think that's every role. Plus, every role, the majority of the climb is understanding what everything in the game does.
Yeah. You need to be aware. If like what a challenger player is, they're aware of, I always say, I know what the enemy team's going to do before they're going to do it. And that's how I go. And they also know what I'm going to do before I go do it. And you're sort of going to play that battle, that mind
and,
game.
No, this is actually an interesting, there's a bit of a detour here, but it's interesting. I got Niall, who's rejoined the program, and he got back to, I think we got back to like GM or something. And he's struggling. He's at a plateau point. I think he's Grandmaster. And I'm like, okay. I said to him this. I said, when I enter a game on my main champions, let's take Cassiopeia, I could tell you exactly from the compositions how difficult this game is going to be and why. And why. Not just, it's not that I know it's going to be hard. Yeah. I know exactly why.
And you could explain it.
And I could explain it incredibly detailed.
Yeah.
I know if a game's going to be close, there's room. And I know that it's going to be tricky, but like not too hard. I know a game's going to be like pretty easy. I can literally sit there, let the enemy roam three times, and I'll still win. I'm able to spot that from champs.
You're already aware. It's like, I'm prepared. I know these. My blind's going to be 0 and 3 here. Or like my top man's going to die up. And like, you're already prepared.
I already know that,
you're
that I can deal
yourself
with these champions, and I know why I can deal with those champions. And then I know the games where I have to do something creative to win. I know that I can't sit back. I can't sit there and farm. And I know where I got to look for a creative half flash. I got to do something. That is all of my experiences with Cassiopeia. And I said, Do you know how to do that? He's like, no, I don't know. I couldn't tell you why this game, or if this game's going to be hard, easy, good, bad. He just knows how to know his lanes. He knows how to dominate his matchups, whatever. But he doesn't know how to think about the game holistically. That is where good quality reviews, being extremely curious, asking yourself why things happen the way they do, asking other people, getting other perspectives, coming to coaching regularly, doing that whole thing for years.
Years, yes.
That's what it is.
Yeah. Remember, you know, that push, we always say that push, you're in the top percent of the player base. That is hard in any industry, you know, next to impossible for, you know, a lot of people, you know, it's insanely hard.
That's right. So that is, yeah, you're spot on. That is the major difference. That is it. Anyway, going back to the post, so the second half of it is how Nefiri teaches playing against assassins. Assassins in League tend to be polarizing. Many players are frustrated by them because they think there's limited counterplay when an enemy can kill you in 1 to 2 seconds once they get on you. And those players are right. For many squishies, there isn't much counterplay in that moment. And that's because if you're a squishy target and the assassin is on you, you've already failed the counterplay. Actually, I just want to stop there. I think that's so good. I laugh so hard at this because I resonate with this back when I didn't play Assassins. You know, I had this huge mental block with Qiyana, and it wasn't until I played Qiyana that I'm like, this champ is so easy to verse. It's, I know exactly what they're going to do. And all it takes is just a one or two things about their kit. For example, this is what I noticed where people struggle against things like Yone, Zed, whatever. Just knowing their cooldowns. If Qiyana uses rock element and then picks another rock element, I know that she has no grass, she has no water, she's She's a minion.
Super vulnerable.
She's so vulnerable. Yeah. If she throws grass and then picks up rock, or she wastes her grass and I walk up into the grass, she has nothing. Like, so a lot of the time, like, just simply knowing how their kit really works can completely change the game of, like, how much threat you think they have onto you. And this is why playing champions that you think that are really, quote unquote, overpowered changes your entire perception of them.
That's a great story. Do you remember that story as well you had of that the guy who had a mental block with Akali?
Oh, with the
program?
I can't remember. Is that with the E usage or something?
Something like that. Can't remember. But he basically...
Oh, with the W usage or something, was it? I know, because I think we've spoken a few things about Akali. But the most common one is Yone.
Oh, really?
Everyone hates versing Yone, and then they think Yone is like this really easy to play champion, and then they play Yone, and then like, holy moly, I can't win a game.
Yeah.
because the thing is, it's like, once you learn how to play around the EQ of Yone,
yeah,
it's like, okay, and then try playing Yone in the mid game in team fights. It's really hard.
Mm.
Sure, if you're just going to stand there like a sitting duck and get hit by the EQ3 into R, of course you're going to... You know, you're going to struggle. But if you avoid that, and then what? He has this long-ass cooldown in his E. He's going to build, a lot of the time, full squishy. He has unreliable, all skill shots, unreliable CC. A lot of the time in team fights, it's really hard, really hard to play mid-game.
Mm.
Being on the other side changes your entire perspective. So I love that, and they're spot on. Assassins are incredibly polarizing. That's what I've noticed in my program. Playing against assassins means sticking with your team. Yes, tracking threats and playing safe when they're not visible, warding your flanks, holding CC until they come in. This means assassins are primarily countered by macro play rather than mechanics. Dude, I love hearing this because these are all... Notice how these are all invisible things, yes, right? Tracking threats, playing safe when they're not visible, warding flanks, holding CC. Notice how it's not about things you do kind of per se. It's more things you don't do.
Yeah.
I love
that. Such an important... That's League of Legends.
That's League of Legends right
there.
Winning
League of Legends is more the plays... When we say our rule of thumb is, it's what plays you decide not to take decides your rank.
Just like Nefiri's kit brings assassin fundamentals into sharp focus, her kit also makes assassin counterplay clear. If you are alone and split pushing and you are the type of champion she wants to munch on, she will be able to close the gap and eat you. If you're not tracking her when she goes missing, she will likely surprise you in the jungle. If you don't hold your CC for when she inevitably jumps into you into the team fight, she'll likely chomp your carry and get out. But this is true for all assassins, but more clear in Nefiri's case. While not all assassins can be body blocked like Nefiri, grouping up and sticking with tanks is still a good strategy. And while Nefiri's W clearly gives her a very long, reliable engage when she finds someone isolated, other assassins have similar tools to surprise you, which might make you start rethinking your positioning and map awareness. If you learn to counter and play against Nefiri, it's very likely those skills will transfer to other assassins that have been frustrating you, which I love. Final thoughts, while Nefiri is probably the most simple assassin to pilot, that does not mean she is as simple as someone like Garen or Annie, and that's because assassins are fundamentally a more difficult role to pick up and to understand. Learning how to hold back when you want to go in, having patience for the right moment, using your mobility at the right time, and knowing your damage outputs at any stage of the game can take time, and Nefiri still needs to do those things to succeed. I love that, by the way, because that is why assassins are fundamentally harder. So knowing your limits, they're a lot more feast or famine. We've really tried to straddle the line between easy to pick up and maintaining room for depth and mastery. She won't have the learning curve of a Zed or a Yasuo, but we think there's plenty of fun to be had for many games on Nefiri. Plenty of ways to flaunt that, whatever. So that's all good. So
the thing that's coming out from, you know, this post is, yeah, the Riot really understand their game.
They really understand their
game.
You
know, these are really high quality questions they're asking to create their champions and create identities for these champions. It's really important.
I love that it's the language they're using. This is like BBC language. This is it. Yes. You know, this would sound like something that we would talk about on the podcast, you know?
Very specific, very detailed. And you think about backing like their season one champ design, it was like, here's a champion. We put two damage abilities and a stun.
Mm.
And like, we chuck a gap close ability here. Or, you know what I mean? Like that champ's like Annie and...
By the way, you know, stop Garen. Using Annie. I'm going to defend Annie for a second. I am going to go on a rant right now, so bear with me.
Yeah.
Annie is the most misunderstood champion in the entire game. I'm going to say up there in the top five.
Yeah.
She is...
Everyone got angry that Annie was in competitive mid as well, by the way. And then wasn't there a series? It was like you watch Faker's Annie versus who's the Jada G Milena again?
Was it Knight? I can't remember.
Yeah, Knight. Yes. Was it Knight? Yeah, is that Jada G won MSI, right?
I know Knight was playing a shit ton of Annie.
Yeah. At MSI. Dude, there was a huge gap in the Annie skill, dude. Oh, if yeah, you actually huge. Watch MSI.
Knight was insane.
And think about it. Yeah, he was insane. And Faker was like shit in the bed with like an Annie or something like
Annie
that.
Annie has one of the most complex, deep skill caps in such a weird way. So this is a few things that a lot of people understand about Annie, right? First things first, the way she works with first strike is unbelievable. You can always proc it every time with your E.
Interesting.
Every time, no matter what.
But how does that work?
So first strike, obviously, when you damage Annie with a shield, you deal damage to them. It reflects the damage, right? Okay. So if you walk at someone with your E and they hit you, you insta-proc first strike. So what you can like basically guarantee first strike proc on repeat no matter what.
Yeah.
And also, and that which is really, really important in mid-game when you can just run in and use your E and then proc your first strike guaranteed every time for extra damage on your R. Hence why you see a lot of Annies use E and then into R for lane control. You get the chunk, you get the gold.
Yeah, that's huge.
It's just huge,
that's
right?
That's huge, yeah.
The fundamental thing that people don't understand about Annie and people complain about Annie is the lack of wave clear, right? But in order to I guess, cover that weakness of Annie, you got to understand the concept of threat. So you got to walk up with your stun and hold your stun, and then with aggressive posturing, use the space you're creating to auto-attack down waves and deny them from hitting the wave, because you have a really long auto-attack range as well, which allows you to circumvent your wave clear weakness. But a lot of people play Annie and the way I'll admit, like, even back in the day, Annie was interpreted as, all right, I'm gonna, you know, kind of sit back and then take electrocuting knight and then play for a one shot. I don't view Annie like that at all anymore. I view Annie as like hyper scaling mid laner. You sit there, you try and farm your ass off, and I'm terrible at Annie. I actually am not good at Annie anymore. I need to get back to my... I'm actually going to really try and focus on my Annie, by the way. And anyway, you need to sit there and farm your ass off. You scale hardcore into the mid-game. You have this incredible E ability, which you can cast on other people as well. Move speed, shield, whatever it is. Damage reduction. Your R is this huge AoE, and you have constant uptime with a stun that you can pick up whenever you want. Point-and-click stun in League is, in general, rare and incredibly powerful. And because you have the AoE functionality with your tibbers, you can go Leandres if you need, you can go Luders, you can go Rockabelle. You have so much build diversity. So there's so much skill cap with the threat and understanding perceived threat, understanding how to create space. And you, again, Annie is not, again, one of those champs where it's not about what you do, it's about what you don't do and how you get in other people's head. In mid-game, versing an Annie is very difficult. If you've got a team that's even and the enemy's even, unless the enemy have very high range, just Annie being in that area with the threat of flash stun, the threat of flash tibbers, it's so...
It changes the feel of the game.
It does. It changes the feel
and
of the
whenever
game.
Whenever I'm playing, I see an Annie in a game, I feel the game's different.
It's different. Yeah. Any champion...
And there's a big difference between a good Annie and a bad Annie.
Oh, it's by a mile.
Oh, wait, no. So I think it was Chovy's Annie. He shit the bed, right? Was it Faker or Chovy?
I can't remember, I'll be honest. I know Knight played really
well
with Annie.
But yeah, just showing the gap. Like, these are the pro players, the best players in the world. But I'm like a Chovy, and they're getting gapped in skill level by like...
And it all came to his positioning. Knight's positioning in mid-game team fights was just incredible. And he found those windows to go flash R, you know? He found them, those crazy windows. So yeah, like I just think Annie is not simple. I don't even think, you know, I think she has a simple, you can interpret it in a simple way, but I think her skill cap is like through the roof high. Absolutely through the roof. So that's a little rant there. I just think she's awesome. I think Annie is so cool.
Very cool champion.
Really cool champion. And all the things you can do with tibbers, there's like an infinite amount of things you can do with tibbers. Pulling waves, stopping recalls, scouting bushes. There's like so many things you can do. But anyway, so Nefiri sounds interesting. And just, I think, yeah, what I wanted to get across here is I love the way Riot are talking about this champion. They know their game. And it'll be interesting to see how the community responds to this champion. And last thing I will say, please, if you're out there watching this, we've just hyped up Nefiri. I get it. But don't play it. Right? And I'm going to stand by this because...
You're saying let... other people work it out first and then you go... I don't know, or...
Playing a champ on release is probably the most dumb decisions you can ever do.
Yeah.
Because they're going to get nerfed. Mm. They're going to get changed. Mm. I've seen so many people waste months of champ mastery let's say Aesol on release, Cassante on release, Melio on release, all these champions, they change dramatically. Mm-hmm. And you just waste it. You get in your head. So you're going to play it. You're going to get your little Elo boost because they are, you know, like Frocks on set. They have to make it strong.
So they can know how to tune it.
So they know how to tune it because it's easier to go down than it is to go up because you need the sample size of people playing it, right? Mm-hmm. So then what happens is that it's going to get nerfed, and then all that time, you might get that LP, then you're going to be, oh shit, what's going wrong? Is it me not playing well, or is it the champ, and your limits are all screwed? It's just a nightmare. Just wait 3-4 weeks if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Then pick it up 4 weeks later, and then you're all good.
Let the dust settle.
Yes, 100%. You got a topic?
Yep, so going back to findings in my, you know, I would still say, you know, our below gold coaching program is very new. We started that this year.
Yep.
You know, we spent 3 years doing gold and above because we thought that was better for our skill set. And this was a different skill set, coaching newer players. So you know how the general advice in League of Legends, Curtis, is deaths. Don't die. Dying's bad. Mm. You know what I found? A lot of the reviews we were doing this week and my findings, you know what the biggest problem these players are? It's not the deaths, it's the missed kills. We were doing like a little exercise, a fun exercise in one of the sessions saying, all right, let's count how many kills you miss here. And it was like the first 4 or 5 minutes and there's like 4 kills missed. That is more important than any death. Dude, that's like, what, 1,200 gold plus all the experience and denying them experience? Because they're just misplaying mechanically every single fight. I had an example of a Wukong game. He sent it to me, you know. He said, oh, I thought I played this game really well, right? Because we only look at fights and champ mastery. That's what we really focus on in the blow gold program. And especially double down now that I've realized that we're missing so many kills. We reviewed every fight and he won the game, had a pretty good score. But every fight, fundamentally, the way he was viewing to have play fights was wrong. Every fight, you know, 7 fights. Imagine winning a game and every fight you've done is incorrect. Right? Like, and you don't reflect on that. And like, that's how you get stuck in League of Legends. Firmly believe. That's how I think that new players really struggle because they're able to win these games. You know, the enemy team, you know, sucks. They have the good team members on their team or whatever. You know, it's not to say that he wasn't completely got lucky that game. He still was doing things. But again, that's just really interesting that I've found is that it's actually the kills missed is more important than did the deaths.
It's so funny you say that because as of, yeah, my sessions, it's been similar, but for a different reason. So like, you're absolutely spot on. The amount of missed opportunities is huge. Whether it's not just a kill, but sometimes a really good trade or a really big, like, yeah. A
I guess lanes are different. The trades, because we don't have trading in the jungle, right. Yeah. I mean, I guess counter jungling is a huge opportunity missed as well.
But right. Yeah. So my point and what I've noticed is that a lot of the time, it's out of fear of failure or fear of dying. It actually is. There's this there is a very, very obvious lack of intentional limit testing. And I just keep I sound like a broken record in my reviews. I say the same thing. I say, if you're unsure if you can kill, do it. That's okay. Why I just find myself saying that over and over and over again. If you don't know, do it. If you don't know, do it. Just do it. Because there's only one way to find out. And then you can chuck it in the clip in our VOD question channel. We can take a look. Because if you don't go and you don't press that button and you don't take that window, there is no learning to be had.
Yeah,
shoulda, coulda, woulda, gone.
You know, this is remember that meme, Curtis? The more you fuck the old guy, the more you fuck around, the more you're gonna find out.
That's right.
That's the way it works.
And the thing is that deaths only matter once you know your limits.
Yeah,
that's you're spot on. Deaths only matter, like lowering deaths matters when you know your limits. But if you don't know your limits, deaths don't matter. Deaths don't mean shit. You got to do it. And this is the tricky thing, Nathan, because limit testing, right? Let's say for your Wukong player, there's probably all these missed opportunities. With where there's more opportunities for kills, there's more opportunity for fuck-ups. Okay? Right? He could, just because there is an opportunity there for him to kill someone, there is an opportunity for him there to misplay mechanically or click the wrong button or maybe not read the map as much because he's focusing on the skirmish or trying to think about how he's going to play this fight or whatever it might be. But that's okay, right? But where this does people's head in is, again, and this is what I found in my above goal program, is that if you limit test all the time and you're in this limit testing zone all the time, it can really beat people down because they're dying a lot. They're losing. They're going down in LP. They look at the number. They're going backwards. And they're starting to think, well, I've joined this program. I'm playing this champion. I'm actually losing. And we all know that what is the number one thing that people don't understand is thinking long-term. I mean, very rarely people think long-term, especially in Below Gold. They're thinking about now, and because their sample size of games oftentimes isn't
very
that much.
Small, yeah.
It's so hard for them to think what's going to happen in the next 100, 200 games because they're so bothered by what's happening in this 20, 30 games. So we've got this interesting clash between two things going on here. We've got an idea, the idea of limit testing, getting uncomfortable, dying, losing, with the idea of, okay, I should play safe because then I won't lose the game for my team and then I can win and then I'll look better, I'll feel better, I got that LP. You know what I mean? Like, these are two clashing ideas. So we actually got to go towards the pain, die, send it, learn your limits, play around, fuck around, and then over time, intentional fucking around is going to lead you in a better position. And that is 110% the case for any melee champion. If you play melee, and most junglers are melees. Mm. They're committal. They're in. Mm. It's hard to get in, get out in a lot of champions.
I always say this is the difference between mid and jungle. I think we've explored this on the podcast before, is that because junglers have such a lack, they're deprived of fighting, they always fight. So again, what I'm saying here is that, so because when you gank, right, it's technically a numbers advantage, right? So just misplan executing the ganks and they're just missing kills, like just straight up, like they'll use Wukong E, like they could just walk up and auto attack and Q and hold E, and then, you know what I mean? Just stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know 100%. I'm literally looking at one like today where it's like, you could walk up here, you don't have to flash E, you can just Q, yeah, and then you get the E, and then they're going to flash, and then you can E up.
That's right. That's the most basic, simple
like stuff
thing.
Like that.
That's
right.
So important, right?
So important, yeah.
Massive. Like, these are the miskills that I'm talking about. Like, they have, the gank is okay, the angle that they're going, everything good, but they just, the guy just runs away.
Same thing as I had Zed one this morning, where he goes up and he does W first, then R, and you could just start this with R, and then they're going to flash, then you W, and then you kill.
Them, yes.
You know, it's like stuff like that.
Very important. Yeah, because that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
But the good thing about that, though, is I feel like that problem is easier to fix than not taking the fight at all. Like, if they go to the fight and they do the wrong combo and they approach it wrong, like...
Oh, yeah, I'd be able to fix that up real easily.
You can fix that easy. Yeah. That's like whatever. I actually don't mind that mistake. Like, I feel like that's actually very easy to fix. Mm. But if someone's not taking the fight at all... Mm. Then it's really hard. It's really,
that's really,
really
hard.
Hard.
Yeah, I agree. Again, I don't really have that problem with junglers because there's always fighting, dude, because they're just sitting in the camps. They want to fight.
I just feel like there's actually a lot of, there's so much differences between mid and jungle, because in mid as well, when you die in mid, you're instantaneously suffering the consequences. But I feel like in jungle, you can hide. Like, you don't get immediately punished a lot of time, because especially in low elo, it's not like you're going to get counter jungle.
In high elo, you get completely screwed.
Yeah, in high elo, but I'm talking in below gold. Like, you can die.
Yeah, you won't get
You can miss camps. You're not going to really get that punished, are you?
Yeah, you just walk back to your camps out of base and here we go again. Here my camps and wait for some cool net.
It's not like the enemy's going to like tower dive the other side of the map. I'll do an objective on the other side of the map. You're just going to like waddle around, you know? Yeah. So I feel like jungle and low elo is incredibly like more forgiving in that sense, right?
Yeah. And then the enemy jungler is just going to ruin the game so easy because they'll do like a really bad gank and just die. I saw it like this Warwick, you know, he got really fed, you know, he was like 4-0 and then he just like, you know, goes for the gank on like, you know, the weak side, his weak side, and he's got like a Nasus versus Darius and he just gets 1v2 by the Darius and just gets a shutdown. Like, because junglers are so good at ruining games, throwing leads, like they're the kings of throwing leads. It's forcing him to start an objective or some shit, you know what I mean? They just start a dragon when it's not their turn.
I actually have a turn for dragons in my program. Like, dragons are a luxury. That's
like
what
that.
I say.
Yeah.
Dragons are a luxury. You can't just do a dragon.
No.
Right? You gotta have one lane, kill their opponent. You've got to be a big advantage.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Yeah. It can't even just priority is just not enough.
It's not enough. They do so much damage. Dragons are so hard to kill. They do so much damage. It's a luxury. You shouldn't even be thinking about a neutral objective until you're either really far ahead or you've got a huge advantage. But yeah, I totally agree with you. Like, learning how to fight, that's going to be my big thing for the next few months.
That's currently the foundation of my entire Below Gold program coaching. Yeah. We talk about fundamentals a bit, but that's not the focus. That's like, you know, 30% of it, maybe more so.
It's interesting. I feel like I can't skip certain fundamentals. Like, I feel like maybe in jungle you might be able to, but in mid, like, I feel like you can't skip like wave management. Like,
no, I think that's really important.
Can't, or like resets. Like, you just can't. Like, there's like certain fundamentals like that, like warding, like basic threat assessment, wave management, resets. Like, no matter the champ you play, like, it's like there in some way, shape, or form. I can't avoid it. It's like there always. So, yeah, it's tricky. But yeah, fighting is going to be the theme and just limit testing, sending it, and people going backwards, honestly. I want people to go backwards. I want people to get comfortable with losing.
Very important.
So something else here. So I actually had a client, and he was having a bit of a mental breakdown. He was a goal client. I'm not going to say his name. And he wrote to me, and he's basically in despair. You know, I suck. He literally said, quote, I believe I've peaked for life and gold. He said that.
Wow. Yep.
That he was, he said, I firmly believe this is the highest or the best I will ever be.
I am not capable of getting higher than gold.
Gold too. He said, yeah, he believed that. He's like, I've been here for a while. I can't do it. I'm just a shit gamer, whatever it might be, right? And so again, what we like to do is we like to look at the, like, just show me, what are you doing? How many games you play? What do you play? Show me your account. So I loaded up his OPGG, right? And I looked at the game, like the seasons, how many seasons he's played. So first things for the first red flag here, gold, main champion, Syndra, 60% win rate over like 70 games, killing it. The next one was Ahri. And it was like, you know, I think it was like not doing too well. Like you can tell that one champ he was killing it, doing really good. The next champ, not that good. Didn't click with this champion, Ahri, for whatever reason, whatever. Games played, I think it was not that many, maybe like 150, 180, not really many at all, right? Then, this is the fascinating thing. I go back and I do some investigation in previous seasons. He had season 4, 5, and I'm like, okay, I wonder how many games he's played in season 4 and season 5. So I go there, it's like 4 ranked games, 10 ranked games in that season. Didn't play ranked for like 3, 4 seasons. Comes back season like 9 or whatever it might be. Look at how many ranked games he played that season. 20, probably 20. The next one, probably 30. We're talking minimal, like literally a week's worth of games in an entire season, right? So I look at it and I'm going to add it up. And I'm like, okay, we've got about, you know, 20 games there, 20, 15 games here. Across these 4 or 5 seasons with a 3-year break in the middle, he's barely played any ranked. This is the first season he's actually ever properly focused on trying ranked. And he's gold too, right?
Yeah. So he's in his mind, he's like an old school long-term league player and stuff like that.
I don't even know what the hell he thinks about himself, but I'm just laying out the facts. That's what I like to do, lay out the facts. And I actually pulled up my OPGG. And then I went to the same season. I said, okay, I'm going to go to my season 4 here. My season 4, I've literally got like, I think, 800, like probably at least 700 games. Next season, 800 games. Like my season 3, 4, 5, there's so many games. I'm looking thousands.
Yeah.
There's thousands of ranked games.
Yeah.
And I add them up. I'm like, look at this. Look at my seasons. Like it's probably at least 700 there. At least. And then I'm like, this is not even my only account. I've got multiple accounts here. I've had multiple Challenger accounts across multiple seasons. So look at this. And you do the maths. What? And it's not like confusing. In my season 3, my season 4, I've got probably between them 1,500 games, you've got 40.
Yeah.
Tell me you're peaked for life.
Yeah.
You barely played the game, dude.
You know how I've also had as well, we actually mentioned on the podcast, like this is really early on, just reminded me, you know how people say it takes 10,000 hours to master, you know, something? And I broke down this guy. Again, he had the same thing. He was like, I feel like I've been playing the game for, he had played the game for 10 years and he had like, yeah, you know, like 40, 50 games. And I really like broke down the math and it's something like, I think he was like gold or something like that, right? And I was like, okay, you're expecting to, you know, start pushing to the top, you know, percent of the player base and stuff like that. And you've played the game for, you know, I mean, let's say he's played, I think it was something like 300 games, you know, across like, you know, 8 years, right, of ranked. So it takes about, you know, 30 minutes each game. That's 150 hours in like 8 years. And I put it in perspective, dude. So are you telling me you expect to be really good at the game or be really even on track to improving with 150 hours? Like if you did, you know, like piano lessons or something like that, you know,
over
like,
that many years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like
put it in perspective, compare it with another skill. If you play piano, If you did, let's say you stretch it out, you did 20 hours of piano over an entire year.
Yeah. 20 hours, dude. That's like 20 lessons.
It's nothing.
Over an entire year. You expect to be like, it's starting to get into intermediate.
And
you know?
Yeah, you're, as a goal player, you're already...
You're pretty advanced.
Yeah. You're already a pretty good League of Legends player if you're a goal player. You're not even a beginner. You're not even close to a beginner.
No.
You're actually not even close.
So you put it in perspective. It's so important, yes. It's just perspective. I agree. That's just... It's laughable when you break it down.
It's laughable.
And this is the thing. People have these perceptions of like their journey. It's like, you know, if you get really specific, dude, you haven't spent that much time improving at the game. Don't think you deserve it because guess what? The community, because everyone always thinks like, you know, gold's bad or, you know, and the disrespect for the game. They don't view the game as a craft to improve. It's like they expect I put in effort and I should just be climbing all the way to like diamond. That's like a good rank. People think diamond. It's like, dude, diamond is insane.
Insane. Absolutely insane. But yeah, again, in the community, it's a...
Because you go to a streamer and they'll be like, you know,
diamond.
I've got this, dogs. Like, you're this grandmaster player. So I'm like, dude, this guy's like, doesn't deserve to be in this Elo. He's like so bad, like this bronze player. He's like playing Grandmaster Challenger Lobby. He's like, the perspective is so off, you know, it's just the view of the game.
Do you want to move on to
Summoner School?
Summoner School?
All right. So, yep. So, Summoner School post of the week. Going back, the focus of this episode has very much been on our below goal program here. So, this is. Has about almost 100 upvotes, 58 comments here. The title of this one is The Climb from Silver to Gold. And he goes, so I'm reasonably well-rounded silver player, I believe. My laning, trading, warding, and leaning, teamfighting, CSing, jungle tracking, big game decision-making, and roaming is all at a silver level. So that's good. He's accepting his level of play, it seems like. If I would focus on one to two areas to really think about every game in order to reach gold, what should they be? And he says, maybe a question for our dear friend, Coach Curtis.
He must be a mid laner.
Yeah. And maybe a BBC-er as well, because he's lurking in the Reddit.
Do you want to answer and then look at the comments?
Or no, I want to look at the comment. Okay. This is the top comment. Everyone was really excited about this. This is really interesting. So the top comment here, this had more upvotes than the post, 138 upvotes, all right? So this is from this guy called the Black Beetle. He says, so many takes here already, and none as stupid as the one I'm about to give. It's interesting here. It seems like he thought this was a weird take, but everyone was getting behind this. He says, I suck in terms of strategy. I will kill the other guy even if I die. I will lose those 6 CS, but you will be half HP. I don't play assassins or chance with dashes, even though they're better, just because I'm old and don't like them. I'm as dumb as a rock. But just by being mechanically good and working well in an aggressive team, I'm a high plat, low diamond player. And I'll stress again, I swear I'm shit. So my tip here would be to focus on what you think is more fun and you'll get there. Do you have fun CSing to the max? You'll be fed and kill others. Do you have fun fighting? Go at it. Don't CS the minions, CS the enemy laner. Do you have fun working as a team strategically? Focus on team champions. From silver to gold is not hard. Just identify what you find as fun and focus in on improving that. And this, and the people in the prize said, I like this reply more than one that I wrote. I think this is unironically my favorite reply to any question ever on Summoner School. It's definitely a very interesting take. Actually, I mean, you're the mid laner, right, Curtis? You want a perspective. But so, I mean, this is sort of like saying, choose a part of the game. This is what I'm getting from this. Choose a part of the game and like master it, which is interesting because that's sort of... You know, that's what we talk about, you know, like, you know, breaking the game down into skills, like champ mastery. But this is sort of more talking about skills in the game here. So they're talking about more fundamentals, it seems. And we talk about in our programs, we want to teach them how to be good fundamental players. But this guy's saying, don't do that. Just focus on one area and just master that. What do you think about this, Curtis?
I haven't really seen that with success. I haven't really seen... So something we've got to understand in League, right, is that the skills are all interconnected, okay? So let's say, for example, you want to get good at... Trading is very broad, right? Mm-hmm. Like, trading is very multifaceted, but, like, let's just use the word trading. But in order to be a reliable trader in lane, you've got to have good wave management. But if you only think about trading in waves, you're probably going to die to ganks. And you're probably going to hugely mess up your resets. And you're probably going to... You're going to find it really hard to stay relevant in a game. Like, at least in mid, a lot of the fundamentals are all tied together. Like, threat assessment with warding and leaning, and then wave management and resets and trading and mana rationing. It's all tied together. They're all interconnected, and you can't get good at one thing from a skill perspective, like in terms of, I'm just talking fundamentals here, that won't compensate for other fundamentals. It just won't. It'll cap out. It won't allow you to go any further, because I don't resonate with the game in terms of maxing out a fundamental. This works in relation to champion stuff, though, where it's like you can get so good at an aspect of your champion, and that can actually override the fundamentals. That is a thing, but I've never really heard of a maxing out a fundamental and then that compensating for everything else. I don't resonate with that, and I don't understand how that would really work.
Because we talk about you when you're learning the League of Legends, the way our journey is, you learn the champion first, you get good at a champion first. And it's like all the fundamentals sort of like around it, like floating around.
So really,
it.
You know, what jumps out to me, I'll come back to this post.
I mean, Curtis, don't we have the case study on that 40K games gold player? What would you say that his skill was? He permanently roamed.
Yeah, he permanently roamed or whatever, or just wanted to roam or trade. He was good, like, in terms of fighting, kind of.
Yeah.
But then everything was just shit. He didn't really get anywhere.
No.
I don't know if he's a great example. He was a bit of a weird. Have you been in?
No, but that's an example of like someone who's gone all in. Like,
well, okay, I'm just going to say what I know. I haven't seen this before.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've coached for a long time. I mean, specifically, I've coached only mid lane for over 3 years, right? I've never seen someone like overemphasize on a fundamental and then that compensate for other. Like, I just haven't seen that.
Well, let's use the one he uses, the 10 CS per minute person.
That doesn't work. There's no such thing as a 10 CS. Like, to get, there's so much that goes into 10 CS per minute. There's no such thing as focusing on 10 CS per minute. Like that's just theoretical. That's just Reddit analyst bullshit. Like, how do you name me if someone is getting reliably 10 CS per minute, they have to have either good resets, good wave, they have to have all of it. You have to. There's no such thing as having good CSing. CSing is like made up of many skills, right? It's many things. You can't actually only CS as well, because you're gonna have to trade with someone at some point, you know? There's no champ in the game that will really allow you to do that. I mean, sure, you might be able to do it the odd game, but then the next game you'll die 1,000 times. Like, you say you're playing Malzahar and you just click E on the way.
My first thought was Malzahar, yeah.
Right, and do that. Okay, well then you're probably going to die to a lane because you're shoving to a matchup you shouldn't shove into, like a Yasuo, and you're going to get ran down and die. Or you're going to die to a gank because you're shoving without warding and leaning. You have to have some sort of threat assessment. You know, you got to have something there. You know, there's got to be something else. So I don't really, again, resonate with it. I think here, I like where he's coming from. I do like the idea of doubling down on something you find fun. I do like that, but not in reference to fundamentals. I like it in reference to champions. So like, let's say you love Aurelion Sol, okay? You can get really, really good at like team fighting with Aurelion Sol specifically, or like really good at like trading with your Q in lane with Aurelion Sol. And that makes a difference. Like, that really makes a difference. Yeah. Like that's not fundamentals,
my Wukong, though. For my Wukong, the full combo, if you're able to execute the full combo, that's going to rocket you up, dude. Like, instantly, basically gold, I think.
If you can play Echo and you can get really good at trading with your EQ in lane, EQ auto, proc that Electro, you can get to gold. Like, not easy, but if you get really good at
really good at it, as well as some other things, you know.
Yeah, as well as some other, you got to have some fundamentals there.
Yeah.
You get to gold.
Yeah.
So I like where he's coming from, but again, not in reference to fundamentals. So get really good at a champ-specific thing, a part of your kit. Like, I swear by this, even with Malzahar, imagine if you got really, really good at knowing how to get max value out of your R. You're just the master of just knowing what makes a good quality Malzahar and a bad quality Malzahar. That would get you to gold. If you had baseline silver fundamentals, but then maxed out your R usage with Malzahar, you'd be gold. I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So and this is again just going to our philosophy of you learn the champ first. Champ mastery is the number one thing in League of Legends, and then fundamentals come after.
Yes, that's right. So the way I would view this, again, I'm trying to visualize it, you would have a baseline champ mastery. You start with your champ mastery, you get the basics of your champion down. Then you layer in your fundamentals, right? So you get your fundamentals to a baseline level. They don't need to be amazing,
nope,
but just baseline. Then you go back to your champion stuff and you go deep on whatever it is you want to go deep on, right? Really good at your EQ usage on Echo or Wukong, really great at your combo usage, really good at your Malzahar R usage, really good on your R placement with ASOL, whatever it might be, that will get you to gold. I totally agree with that. So I like where he's coming from, kind of, but not really.
Okay, Curtis, so I'm going to spitball here my perception of the person who wrote this, right? I think, so this guy says he's a high plat, low diamond player, and he thinks he's really bad at the game. I reckon this player has been playing the game for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And guarantee you. You know what? I would say that mindset, I reckon that a lot of people did sort of learn the game. Dude, back in like the prehistoric days, like season 2, 3, 4, if you were just a really good CS player, I don't think you can get away with that anymore. So the ways that I'm sort of saying is I think this is actually a prehistoric way of learning the game, and the game has evolved and developed and the player base has gone a lot better. That's my perception. And also this player as well, because he's played for so long, he's forgetting about his aspect of champ mastery that people forget. Like if you played the game for so long, yeah.
This guy has no idea how good he is. He has no idea.
Yeah.
Absolutely no idea. No. He has so much assumed knowledge.
And muscle memory.
But he completely is taking it for granted. He has no idea. Mm. This is what I've actually noticed. This is the key theme of this is the League of Legends in a nutshell right here. People do not understand how much they really know about the game.
Because they don't view them putting in those thousands of normal games that we all did in season, you know, these old school players of season 3, 4, 5, 6, playing with just with friends. They didn't think that they were actually playing the game.
This guy could never, actually, he can never be a new player. A new player would never get to high plat like that.
Yes, I agree, 100%.
Never. He cannot
that's
be.
That's a prehistoric way.
It's a prehistoric player. He has to be at least from season 6 or something, yeah, at minimum, right, in my opinion.
I'd be interested to see if that guy watches. I'd love to know.
Me too, I'd love to know. Like, if he was a new player, like started in season 10?
Then we could 10, be massively wrong.
Or 11?
Yeah.
If he started in season 10 or 11, like, then we're I'd be shocked. I'd be really shocked.
We would have to maybe make
that. That means he would have to be, if that were the case, that means he would have to be a hardcore sophisticated gamer coming from a different gaming background. Really good gamer.
Yeah.
But then he's not dumb as dog shit then, you know? That means he's a really good gamer. Mm. So it's one or the other. He's a really good gamer who's come from a sophisticated gaming background, or he's an old school League player, which is highly likely the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, so to really wrap this up, if I would actually answer his question properly, like, I think that I would go back to champ mastery.
Yep.
If you feel like your fundamentals are good, always the answer is champ mastery.
Yeah.
Go back. It could be you don't know your matchups that well. You're taking really bad trades. You don't know.
You're team fights, assessing.
You're missing basic like R's. Yeah. I don't know what champ you play. Play one champ and get really good at that one champion and study that champion. Get inspiration from people who play that champ. Like, I've been saying this advice at the moment a lot. I don't know how you say it in your program, but like, I just tell people, just watch other people. Just fight with your champion.
That's right. Well, you go to a Vogue.
It doesn't matter what rank. It's diamond.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Watch it. Yep. Just how are they playing fights? How are they using their abilities? That alone will get you. If you're doing that with an open, curious mind and you have good fundamentals, you'll get gold very soon. I promise you, if you're playing regular games.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting the games, that's the important
part. You got to get the games. Yeah. Champ mastery.
Cool. I think that's
I hope that Blackbeard watches the podcast.
Yeah, I agree. I really want to know his gaming background, his journey. And if you could just link his OPGG, it would help a lot.
Yes, link the OPGG.
All right.
Move on to clips.
Yep, Curtis Clips.
Let's get into the details, guys. And welcome, everyone, to Curtis's Clip Corner. All right, so we're diving in here. Now, poise. Poise is something I talk a lot about. People like to panic. This is a low gold Lux here. Now, she made a bit of a blunder in the early game, died to the Yasuo, and typically this is where the panic sets in for a lot of people. They make a mistake, they feel like they're getting a bit behind the curve, things are not going their way, and essentially, she comes back, and the Yasuo had base, so she one-shots the wave, which is great. And what happens is the Yasuo actually roams out of base. You'll see in a second. The Yasuo roams out of base directly bot side. So it literally goes right out of base. And, you know, in games like this, you know, we're talking before about, you know, sometimes your job is to simply not die. You can't win the 1v1. You can't even win the 2v2. Sometimes you just got to sit there and you got to farm and you got to be annoying and you got to get to your spikes and you got to find a window eventually later on that coincides with your job. Lux's job is not to kill the Yasuo. That is not your job. Yasuo counters Lux. You're not going to kill, especially a Kindred. Kindred Lux is not going to kill a Yasuo. Very, a lot of skill shots. You're not going to do anything. And what happened, and what is what I've noticed as a trend, both in the below gold and even just in gold in general, in the Midland Academy program, a lot of control mage players, it even happens with assassins, people panic when they get behind and they lose sight of their job. And so what actually happens here, the Yasuo roams bot, kills the Kindred, and she was so busy trying to, you know, like panicking, oh my god, my jungle's dying, oh my god, forgets that the Sejuani was doing the rift on the other side of the map, starts hitting the tower, and just dies to a very, very basic gank. And I'm like, this is the reason you're not going to win this game. Because if we look at the game, what I was saying is that we can stall this game out. We can make this game very, very, you've got a great, you've got, I mean, you've got a 3-1 Fed Malphite. You had a 4-2 Kindred who's still going to do her thing. You can stall this game out for long. They've only got one dragon. We can stall this game, but we can make it hard for them to win. But all it takes is you just keep your farm up, ward and lean, and don't die. And this is half the battle, Nathan, about League. It requires constant on. You have to be constantly on.
That's the fun part of that League.
And you've got to be constantly aware of what your job is.
Yeah.
If you ever, in a game, don't know what your job is and you're feeling lost, you don't know what you need to do, you need to investigate.
It's very easy to lose, forget about that as well. That's the hard thing, because what I see with Lux, let's say the Lux knew the job, playing, you know, it looks like, you know, farming well, didn't have that many deaths, right? It's not like the 0-6.
Yeah,
it's right?
0-1, yeah.
0-1, right? Something like information happens, chaos happens, bot fight. She got thrown off by Yasuo going bot, and then suddenly she's been thrown, and then the mental stack's now overwhelmed, and then she forgets
she forgot what she needed to do.
That's the way I interpret this type of situation.
She forgot. But you know, and this is the thing, this is why you gotta always be willing to calibrate. What do I need to do? Where are they? Where's my counter? Who can kill me? And this is why LOL state calibration, actually identifying who the key threats are, is super, super important. Because in my opinion, as a Lux in this situation, there's only two people that you really ever need to be thinking about this scenario. I mean, think about it. Teemo's dead on top side. Teemo's never going to be a problem behind. Milio is not going to be a problem for you. The only two people that you have to care about is Yasuo and Sejuani.
If you just don't die to them,
if you're be literally only aware of those two people's location, roughly, you're going to be fine. Mm. So this is why, again, priming your mental, like, what are the key threats? Who do I actually need to think about? Who is relevant in this game? That's going to save you so much trouble. Because even if a distraction happens, well, there's Yasuo. Where's Sejuani? Oh, shit. You know? So this shows to me, yeah, I think there's an element of distraction, but I actually think the bigger, I think this person's lost their usage. I think they lost the pot before this point.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I think you shouldn't be getting this distracted. Like, especially if you're not interacting with anyone. Yeah, this is already
distraction of coming down here.
This is a pretty small distraction in the grand scheme of things. Like, you should be really, really thinking about how you're going to die to Sejuani, especially with no flash. Like, that's...
Ooh.
You know, if you have no flash, you've got to be hyper aware of your environment, you know? Yeah,
we should be chucking wards down. Like, we got wards in inventory. Yeah, we're chilling.
And this is the other thing, and this is not related to the clip, but it's just a bit of a tangent quickly here. Have you noticed, I don't know if in your program, have you noticed people overemphasizing the enemy's ability to translate leads? Like if you...
Oh, they think they'll close out the game if they get a fed. Yeah.
Have you noticed that at all or not? I don't know if it's prevalent in jungle, but it's definitely prevalent in mid
lane. I can't really say, no.
Well, so what I've noticed, Nathan, is that I'm reviewing a Lux, I'm reviewing an Aesol or Seraphine or any champion. Someone dies in the early game. The mid laner gets a kill, the jungler gets a kill, whatever. And in gold, and below gold especially, no one's stacking dragons, Nathan. Mm-hmm. No one stacks dragons. If the enemy are not stacking dragons, and they're not getting Rift Heralds, and they're not using Rift... The game just will always go to three items.
Yeah.
And what happens every time, without a doubt in my mind, they instigate the fight. They fight the dragon when they're down 15 kills. I'm like, you do realize that if you were to simply give this dragon and the next dragon, and that's even saying that they're going to stack dragons, this game can guaranteed go to 30, 35 minutes. How are they going to end the game?
And then Champ Master will kick in. And if you're playing fights and you know your job really well, you're in a really good spot.
And do you think they're going to properly set up Baron? Do you think they're not going to have the control vision?
It's going to be caught.
It's going to be a mess. You can make the game messy in the mid game because people don't know how to end games.
I think the reason why I don't see this as much as jungle, because junglers can technically always do things.
Right.
You know, like, you're not really sitting back and just slowly losing a game. Right. You know what I mean?
You're the one doing the things.
Or losing the game for your team.
Or starting that objective.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. All right, lovely. Move on to mailbag.
Away we go. All right, first question here. It's more so a success story. We love to get into some success stories with the BBC. We love hearing from
Not just failures.
we do talk a lot about failures, but also the diversification, just how diverse our audience is.
Yep.
This is from Patrick. Title's email is Finally Hit Master. Hello, coaches. I'm finally able to write to you as I've just hit master tier. First of all, I want to thank you for all the great content, which I truly believe helped me a lot during the season. I could write a wall of text about my background, but I will try to summarize it. I'm a 32-year-old dad from Hungary with a wife and two small children. I have a full-time job at a big bank and a house to take care of. My gaming background and achievements are multi-gladiator in original WoW Season 2 to 4, then switched to League of Legends at the end of Cataclysm around the end of Season 3 of League of Legends. I quickly climbed to Diamond 4, then went up to D1 90 LP. Eventually, I started playing 3v3, which I enjoyed a lot. In Season 5, I ended 3 accounts in 3v3 Challenger, peaked at rank 9. So already here, so people might be saying, you know, can I'm 32 years old. You know, like, this is awesome. Like, he's got a family and kids. But this guy's put in insane work in terms of being a hardcore gamer prior to this. This is very important to sort of note. I want to just mention this. Because we talk about the gaming journey, how important that is to reflect the rank. And, you know, Master Tier is a very high rank, obviously. So this guy's a hardcore gamer. And he's been, you know, he's Diamond 4, D1. Dude, that was almost basically, that's Grandmaster today, right? Like, D1.
In what season?
In Season 4, because it was a challenge.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's really good.
So he stopped playing after Twisted Treeline was removed and only came back for WoW Classic. I loved it and also enjoyed competing in PvE DPS as a warrior. Interestingly, I recorded and reviewed the raids religiously to work on my mistakes, which resulted around top 50 DPS worldwide in some instances. I was looking forward to playing arenas in TBC Classic. People that don't play WoW has got no idea what these guys are saying, by the way. But I did not find too much success, so I started playing LoL again around the middle of Season 11. So he's taken a pretty big break. This is like 6 seasons break or something like that, right? 6 seasons, yeah. I tried playing mid first because I played mages mostly in 3v3, but I got annoyed by junglers, so I decided to switch to the role of jungler. After a long struggle in Platinum, I finally hit my goal of getting Diamond 4, 20 minutes short of the end of the season, which was quite exciting. I was hovering between around Diamond 3 during Season 12 on four accounts, and was struggling with improving. At one point, I honestly thought that the games is like gambling and almost gave up as it felt like a waste of time. I watch a handful of content creators, which helped, and in the end, I found this podcast. I play in 2 blocks because of limited time I can sit at the PC. I think the main difference came from learning jungle and champion fundamentals, reviewing and thinking about the mistakes. But actually the biggest change was my relationship with the game. I'm not sure what it was about it, but it made me miserable and angry a lot. However, after I started following your advice, it has changed completely. I still get annoyed, but being curious is a much stronger feeling now. And after a devastating 2-2 AFK before 10 minutes promo series, a couple of days ago, I finally climbed to Master. I promised myself to apply to Soul 2 once I felt like I could no longer improve, which might happen soon as the game will be much harder based on what I hear from you. By the way, I got Master on EUNE. It seems to me that until D1, the two servers are quite similar, but I will switch back to my D2 accounts on EUS and continue the climb there because of what Expertu mentioned in the last podcast. Again, thanks so much for the content you are creating. It has made a huge difference in my life. All right, so the angle that I want to take with this, Curtis, here is that those sort of like old school gamers, especially WoW gamers and stuff like that, I mean, just in general, just gaming, there's a complete lack of respect for gaming, I feel like. You know, like back in like, you know, 10 years ago or something like that, you know, like this is sort of where the narrative is like you're either talented or you're not. You either invest a lot of time and just have that knack, and you get to like Gladiator in a WoW or something like that. There was never ever talked about in terms of like, you know, improving at a game or, you know, improving even at WoW. Like WoW Arena had like skill caps that was sort of like, you know, came up, and that was some really good players teaching the game. But I find that this is the next generation we're going into, Curtis. Like when people grow up with games now, instantly it's like there's coaches around. Like, so this is for League of Legends specifically and stuff like that. But that's why he struggled when he came back so hardcore, is because he's built all these really bad habits of being like a high-end... Because the way he got good at games before was not... it was just like...
It's not replicable.
It's not replicable, that's right. But now it's like... The way that I view it now, it's like, let's say it's like a kid of like going through a program. You're like, you know, you're in the... Let's say if you're in like, you know, AFL in Australia, you have like Auskick. And then, you know, you start from as a kid and you go and you work your way up through the leagues and stuff like that as you grow older. Like, that's where we're starting to get to, and I'm excited about. But these type of gamers, it's really, they have a huge time, because you said relationship with the game was a huge problem. That's because of his perception of games and how he got good at games in the past. Because the way you get good at League and get good at the game at the beginning reflects most of your journey, I find. You know, we say that long-term League of Legends players are the hardest to coach because, especially ones that got good at the game, high elo at the beginning, they're so hard to coach because they have no understanding of how to improve at the game or any respect to the game.
It's not really because of their habits in the game. It's more so their view of what improvement really looks like, because it's like, well, I did that. I got results. I'm doing the same thing. I'm not getting results. Therefore, that's why he had that little period as well in his journey where he genuinely started to feel like he might be rigged. Like, you know, and that was crazy to me hearing that. I'm like, think about this. This is a very, like, you know, 32-year-old dude.
He's been at the top of so many games.
Like, doing well in life.
Yeah.
You know, killing it. Great at many, many games. You know, long-term gamer. And still... feeling like, oh my god, like, is this game rigged? Like, is this bullshit? Like, the LP games, like, the writers are keeping me here. The fact that he could even remotely think like that, right, is scary. And it just goes to show how, you know, that's where the, like you said, the how you improved at the start really screws with your head. And he was going to come in expecting that you could probably do the same thing, and it just didn't work. So yeah, I think, you know, it's definitely impressive, but, you know, and we're not here to discredit his journey at all. It's an incredibly impressive journey. And we're glad to have helped you. But yeah, I think it's important to caveat that the gaming background makes a very big difference here, doesn't it?
And relationship with the game is just so important. Yeah. I mean, that's what he said straight up. This is what helped the most.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the time, again, it's not this guy didn't have a skill problem. You know, he's been the top in all the games. But the way he views the game, it just goes to show how important League is in terms of mindset. And that's what makes the game great.
It really, we're going to sound like, you know, we're repeating ourselves, Nathan, a lot. But the word curiosity, I'm obsessed with that word at the moment. Because like you said towards the end, right? It was the curiosity that really kind of got him over the edge. And it was like, that's really, that curiosity was like kind of the pillar. That's what replaced his previous view of the game. When you have that preconceived notion of what should happen or how your climb should go or how fast you should climb or you should deserve to win or XYZ, that is the opposite. Being like entitlement or deserving something is the opposite of curiosity in a way, because curiosity, you're open to the idea that you may not get something. And, you know, there is probably a reason for that. But if you feel like you're entitled, you deserve something, it's kind of like you expect it to be already given to you. So you don't need to be open-minded. You don't need to be curious. It's given to you on a platter.
His mindset was, if I just play more, I'll be better. Because that's what he did. You know, especially PVE rating. That's how you get rewarded. That's how the reward system works, right? You know, you got to play a lot to...
League has a great way of humbling you. And you're spot on. It'll be very interesting to see how, you know, in League, right? Because we kind of see now there's a generation of players that are still in the ecosystem that are only there because of their experiences either playing League from a very young age, right? They play, and like they were the original gamers of League. They're slowly kind of fading out now, really. But then also, yeah, gaming, sophisticated gaming background in other old school games like that of WoW, whatever, right? But what happens when that's all gone? What happens when the original game is League? When League is in a place where coaching exists,
like, and the play base is really good.
Like, what actually happens? Like, it does this relationship with the game even happen anymore? Like, will League, question. You know, will League even be? But maybe we're just in a bubble, Nathan. Maybe our whole perception, like this little community we have going here, is this niche little thing where we talk about relationship with the game or whatever, and And coaching is kind of, I mean, coaching definitely is becoming more mainstream, right? Like back in the day, right? We mentioned before, coaching was kind of looked down upon. And yeah. It was a
reviewing
small,
your game was
who the fuck reviews unheard of.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of like, that's the norm. If you don't review, you know, you're an idiot type thing. Everyone now agrees upon that.
Mm.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see kind of how the culture or how the community is going to shift or the player base is going to shift around this idea of improvement. And how that's going to shift the mindset. What's the mindset of the average player going to be like? And what does randomly autopiloting with no coaching get you?
Yes. That, you know what I mean? That's a great question.
That's
to
a
ask.
Really interesting question.
In 10 years, what is the answer to that question?
Yeah. What does that look like? Mm. Like
imagine if you just can't get out of bronze, you're just bronze forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there's no such thing as like you're talented or whatever. It's just like the game is so sophisticated. Even if you're like a good gamer, that only gets you to like silver.
Hmm.
That could be the case. And with the amount of educational content out there and with the amount of coaches out there, it wouldn't surprise me if the you know, by that point, you know, you basically have to get coaching or your journey's just gonna be absolutely brutal, you know? Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting.
Again, I think we're really far away from that. Oh, like
galaxies away.
Like 15 years plus, like because yeah. Because still if you're a good gamer, you know, you can still I would say get diamond really You know, if you're like high Valorant or something like that, you could go to League and get pretty high pretty quickly.
Yep, yeah. That's right. You could get diamond.
All right, next question here comes from Perry. The title of this email is Origins of the Process. Hi, Curtis and Nathan. I'm a relatively new listener. I've been watching since episode 120 and since then have also watched backwards to episode 90 now. Love the content and concepts covered on the show and have been applying them to my games. I'm surprised at how effective they are and how no one else covers this kind of content. Watching from episode 90 to 154 now, I've gotten completely curious as to how you guys came up with the process. Like, when was it invented? What happened that led to you guys feeling the need to implement a process? And how did it start? I'm not sure if you guys have talked about this before, but for the benefit of your newer listeners, it would be great if you could go over origins of the process. Thanks and keep up the good work. Story time, Curtis?
Well,
because if you really break it down, so this is our experience in Direwolves, right? Mm. And Jonathan Brown, right? We say a big influence.
I don't think there's... It's not like one moment. It's like a lot of little things that we've learned. So to be clear, for those of you who are newer listeners, Nathan and I worked in Direwolves, an esports organization in Australia.
That I founded.
That Nathan founded, and I was the head coach. And
2014.
And we learned a lot during that time. And we had a performance director, Jonathan Brown. We did an episode with him, an earlier episode, and you know, we learned a lot about, like, we tried to just study high performance in general, like gaining inspiration from many different fields, whether it was other sports, whether it was high achievers in any field. It wasn't even necessarily just sports, even like, you know, like trading, you know, poker or...
We have Bill Walsh here, dude. The score takes care of itself.
Yeah.
San Francisco 49ers.
So basically, what we did over the years of, or was more kind of where I was directing my attention on the performance side, was between the years of 2017 to 2019, it actually came out of necessity. It's like, okay, we're from OS, we're the underdogs. If we just play solo queue like everyone else, we're going to get shit on internationally, right? So, because what actually happened in 2017, we went to MSI, got shit on. Went to Worlds, got shit on. So, I'm thinking to myself at the end of 2017, like, well, what we've just done is...
Not working.
We had the best team. I couldn't even imagine putting together a better team. We had an undefeated season. We were the best team I could possibly imagine. And we did everything to our limit, tried as best. There was insane work ethic, and we weren't even close to competing on the international stage, which led to me thinking we're like having an existential crisis. Like, what are we going to do? What's the point of us existing if we can't be internationally competitive? So, you know, our biggest goal was, how do we make Direwolves, our team, globally competitive? We don't want to be top of this small, shitty little region. We want to be an actual team that can beat a team from America or Europe or whatever, China, Korea. So then we thought to ourselves, okay, well, given our solo queue, our population is so small, we're not going to have the best quality solo queue. So we got to rule that out. We can't grind solo queue. So we got to, A, figure out how to maximize the learning from our solo queue. That was priority number one, and really emphasize solo queue. We did believe that was the key to success. But we also, number two, had to figure out a way to get an advantage in some way, shape, or form from other areas. It's kind of like, you know, the whole Moneyball thing where like,
yes,
it's like Moneyball. It's like, if you haven't seen that film, it's a good film with Brad Pitt. You know, they basically, the small club or whatever, they had to figure out a way to be competitive using
small budget.
Right. So that was kind of like us. So then basically between Jonathan Brown, myself, and Nathan was chipping in there as well. And, you know, we basically just researched and read and studied and read and tried shit. Some of our biggest inspirations were Bill Walsh from the 49ers, his book, The Score Takes Care of Itself. Ray Dalio from Principles was a really big one. We tried a lot of crazy shit from Principles. John Wooden, obviously a big one, and his books on leadership and how he ran the UCLA team, college basketball, in a game of tennis. The list goes on. Many, many things from many different fields, psychology, and really understanding the mind and how we work and how learning goes on. And between all of that, we accrued a lot of information. And so essentially when Nathan and I parted away from Dibbles at the end of 2019, and we came into where like started, you know, our coaching programs and dabbled around with Jungle and Mid Coaching and this podcast, we just basically had our experiences from what we're working with our clients combined with our experiences in Direwolves to create what our philosophy on what the game is, or what we perceive to be the best way to improve at the game now.
Yeah.
So it's an amalgamation of many, many things. For an example, I created, I'm going to say this, the champion identity. I literally created the word champion identity, and you cannot find a single person on the internet who used the word champion identity before me. And I can tell you exactly where it originated from. The book, It Starts With Why by Simon Sinek. He has this little circle, three circles, and in the middle is like a why. And the why is, you know, it leads to how, and then the how leads to what. And then I thought about that in reference to league. Well, if you can understand why a champion wants to do something, then we can better understand how, and then we can better understand what they want to do. You can't start with what, and then like if we think about what a champ wants to do in every, like how do we determine what a champion wants to do? Well, we need to understand its why. Okay, well, what is a why? And he uses the word identity in the book. And I'm like, well, let's just put two and two together. You know, we're not talking about a human identity. We're talking about a champion's identity. And that's the why of the champion, which leads you to unlock everything, understand your role and all that shit about a champion. And then that was one of the cornerstones of our philosophy in league. And then we realized that, okay, playing one of our, this came from Direwolves, playing, this was actually Jonathan Brown's, his philosophy was, it's not about quantity of solo queue, it's about quality of solo queue, because the brain can only focus for a certain amount of time. So he was a massive advocate of playing less games but having better quality review, so you can actually understand what you're doing. And so we kind of took things from there, tried reviewing, but then streamlining the review process, and plus our experiences as players and what's worked for us as individuals in the solo queue ladder, combine that all together. And then we just stumbled across what we currently have here on the BBC. That's like the story together.
Mm. Yep. I think you perfectly summarized it. I'd say that when we started, for our experiences in Direwolves and esports being the top of OS for, you know, 2 years that we were, we identified moving into this coaching space, we needed to come up, as you said, with a philosophy, and we needed to create a process. We didn't know what it would look like. There has to be a process, because that's the way it works.
That's the way improvement on any field works. Like if you go to any sport, anything, they always talk about what is their process, what is their way of doing something. And especially NFL, American football, they're very process oriented. And then they're like probably one of the most process oriented, but it applies to all. Remember, we got really obsessed with this show on Amazon.
All or Nothing.
And it does a deep dive into the American football teams. And I remember we watched one about the Dallas Cowboys, and then the Rams or something?
Yeah, LA Rams.
Sean McVay. He was a big inspiration for Sean McVay from the Rams. And Pete Carroll from the
Seattle Seahawks.
And then Michael Gervais, who was their sports psychologist for their team. And I went down the rabbit hole with Michael Gervais. Many, many different inspirations and their philosophy. I know at the Seattle Seahawks and Michael Gervais, their performance director, they were really big on understanding your why as well. Like having like a, he called it like he had a different way of framing it though. It's like everyone needs to know like why they compete. Kind of like, what are they doing here? Why are they here? What are they, where's their fuel coming from? Kind of like, what are they here to do on this earth? And like Pete Carroll's, I remember, was his, he had his little slogan, which was always compete. Was it? It was always compete.
You were talking about, I'm competing not just on the field, I'm competing to be a better father. I'm competing to be a better husband. Like all these things. He viewed life as like a competition.
And that was a huge inspiration. Like, how, that's so cool. And we just, yeah, took these little things and we put them all together and we're like, wow, this, okay, this isn't working. Because you've got to start with something. You've got to have the balls to have a philosophy. Now, that doesn't mean you've got to be rock solid on that philosophy. We got to be open to the idea that we're probably going to be wrong many times, and we have been wrong with many things. I've been completely fucking wrong with many things I've said on my YouTube. But then you got to, you start somewhere. It's like in league, you got to make a mistake, you got to make a decision, right? And you fuck up, but then you only now after you see the result, it's like, well, we're not getting any results here. This person's not going anywhere. We're not climbing. So, okay, maybe that doesn't work. Let's try something else. And we've just done that over years, thousands of coaching sessions. And then you kind of have somewhat of an idea of what works and what doesn't work, right? And yeah, that's where we are today. And we're still just tinkering away. But, you know, this is really one of the key messages that we don't talk about on the Broken By Concept, which is our personal, I would say our personal life philosophy, which is, you know, there is a lot of knowledge out there and there's a lot of, everyone has their own experiences in life and everyone has, there's masters of different crafts out there. We have Jiro Dreams of Sushi, another great documentary that inspired us. You don't have to agree with every single thing that that person does, how they live their life and what they believe in, right? We're all different, right? But you got to, don't be afraid to pick and choose things from differing experts and differing areas, different from people from different walks of life to create your own philosophy, you know? And even like Nathan and I, the Broken By Concept, we're just one take. You might agree with parts of our message. You may not agree with other parts of our message. And I think that's a really healthy way. We think that's a very healthy way to go about whether it's getting better at your, or becoming a better, your best version of yourself, or whether it's being a better league player or a better partner or whatever it might be. It's like, you got to take inspiration from everywhere. Don't get ultra locked on one thing because you're just doomed to fail. And because everyone's different, everyone's in a different situation. So that's kind of, I think that was really the foundation that why me and you worked so well together. We had that, this idea that we could just take things from everywhere.
Experiment, plug and play.
Yeah, and that's very important. I think that is the foundation. I think that is really, truly the foundation of the Broken By Concept. Trying shit from everywhere, from all walks of life, getting inspiration from everywhere and anywhere, trying it, putting it to work, putting it to the test, and then seeing what happens. We're really just scientists, right?
In the lab, we're in the lab.
Yeah.
Figuring things out. And we don't have anyone to follow because this is a new industry. And that's the exciting thing.
That's
part.
The exciting for us.
This is right? Why we love this, guys, is because we're, you know, we feel like, hopefully, that we're really paving the way for, League of Legends.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely not many other people paving the way, that's for sure. I mean, we feel because we love the game, there are many other people with their take and philosophy on the game. We think that it's completely wrong and twisted and backwards and it's destroying the game. So we feel like we have an obligation, a responsibility here to share the other side of the coin and our philosophy on the game and what we love about the game. So you kind of see it, right? The Broken By Concept is very different and opposite to a lot of the content out there for a reason, because we have very stark different views on League.
All right, so I think that's a really good, that's awesome, Curtis. I think you summarized it really well there. That's definitely the journey of how we ended up with the process. And if you want to get, you know, more specific on what, we won't get into it here, but, you know, the three blocks and all that sort of stuff, go watch our season 13 ranked guide, or you can just watch all the ranked guides.
They're great.
It's all there. That's really breaks down the way we view improvement in the game and all that sort of stuff. All right, our last question here we'll do is this is from Logan. The title of this email is Getting the Most from Other Coaches. Dear Nathan and Curtis, my name is Logan and I'm an 80 carry main in North America. I've wrote in before, but it's been a while. Really appreciate all you guys do for free here on YouTube. If I was a jungler, mid or support main, Shout out to Coach Cupcake here. I'd be all over joining Sol 2 or MLA or Coach Cupcake's programs. But as top and bot players in the BBC community don't currently have a role model with a similar mindset coaching program you guys have, as far as I know. Maybe someday I'll swap roles for good to join. In the meantime, I really like playing AD carry, but I've been silver for a long time. So long that I'm really lost as what I need to do to push into gold. So I'm considering trying a coaching session. The coach I want to hire charges $100 for an hour-long VOD review, which is pricey, but oh well. I'm writing to ask you guys what I can do to get the most out of this 1 hour single game VOD review. For example, do I bring a loss or would I get more from a game where I think I did well so that I could have my mistakes pointed out and my narratives broken? I'd love to hear what you guys think I can do before, during, and after this one session that might help get the most out of my $100. Thanks.
All right. Well,
I think it's really simple, Curtis. I got some quick dot points here. Okay. Don't bring one game, bring multiple games.
Yeah, that's what right.
So
say.
Like, I would say you just got to squeeze the coach, like do four games, like try and squeeze in four games. You review the game beforehand, have all your end yes. review points, your yes. notes, and see if you're the way that you viewed why you lost the game or where you put your focus on matches up with the coach.
Absolutely spot
on. I think that's the quickest way straight up to get the value out of that.
Yeah, I was going to say to ask the coach first, say, I'm going to bring, like tell them I'm going to bring four VODs, but I don't want to do one VOD. And then, yeah, so bring as many as you can. But Nathan is absolutely spot on. You must review these games and identify what you deem to be the key errors, right? And look, I don't know the quality of the coach. And again, this is tricky, right? Because they might overemphasize certain things. But I think maybe I would really ask this question. What do you think is specifically the most important thing in my Elo racket to get to gold? Again, I want to like make it clear. Like, what do you think? Because I think that it's very easy to get caught up in details that aren't important. Like, I really would like to, like, if I were you, I would say, okay, I know there's a lot wrong with my play, but I really just want to know the key things that are holding me, preventing me from getting to gold. I don't need to get to master. I don't need to get to diamond. I just need to get to gold. Tell me, I want to really streamline that and say, that's why I'm bringing four. So I just want to see what are the key errors here that's going wrong. And then also, before as you're wrapping up the session, make sure you ask for actionable learning objectives, things that you can focus on like one at a time, and just it doesn't have to be all at once, but let's say four things that I'm gonna have to work on that I can work on for the next four months, you know, like okay, you work on this for a month and that for a month and that for a month, and then yeah, I think that's kind of what I would do. Yeah,
cool.
And it's pretty similar.
Yep.
Yeah.
One thing actually I just reminded him as well. So I don't think I've talked to you about this, but our friend of the show, he's done some editing with the podcast, but he doesn't really do stuff on the podcast at the moment. Charlie, he's offering free AD carry coaching to the community.
Okay.
And he told me to say that, don't expect anything. He knows his shit, but he just wants to learn and just experiment. He only wants a couple of people. So I'm going to put
this guy should actually go to Charlie.
Yep, absolutely. You know, he's offering free. I'll put Charlie's Discord in the YouTube description. You can just add him on Discord and he will do some free. But he's in experimental phase. He wants to see if he can do AD carry coaching. For just a background, he's been in the OS coaching scene.
He was a coach for the Direwolves as well.
Many years.
He's been in the ecosystem for a very long time.
He was a coach for Pentanet, who went over to MSI. He didn't go to MSI himself, but he was the coach of that season team of Pentanet with Pabu, like 2021, the team that beat Cloud9.
Extremely knowledgeable and a pragmatist, understands the small details.
And follows, I mean, he listens to the, we're close friends with him, so he knows our philosophy straight
up. That's right.
And also, he's like currently master tier in O solo queue, and he's been grandmaster on jungle and support as well. That's
highly recommend. Offer.
And yeah, he's only got a couple people he only wants. So get in quick.
Get in quick, guys.
All right, well, that's it for our podcast then today, Curtis.
Beautiful. Let us know your thoughts, comments, questions. We'll be floating around the comments.
Floating around. And we've got an exciting episode next week, which we'll do.
Not going to spoil, but we've got a very exciting episode.
Stay tuned. Good work, guys. Let's keep on improving, and we'll see you next time.